Welcome to the Punk News Podcast for the week of July 17, 2013. Strap in because we got, well, some stuff to talk about. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is John Gentile, Features Editor. And I gotta say, Punk News people, a lot of the time we're like, big news week, we're usually like exciting news week, but I gotta say, Punk News people, not a whole lot happening this week. I gotta say, a little bit, but not a whole lot happening. I'm here with Adam White. Adam, did you think there was a lot happening this week, or was it kind of a slow, chilled out week?
This is a slow week. This feels like the news doldrums that we have in like early January. So I don't know. It's really hot out, right? So that's probably it. You know, no one's going to do anything too newsworthy when it's hot, because then you gotta get all sweaty.
You know what, though? I mean, it could be a good thing. So this week, instead, you know, usually our podcasts are jam-packed, lots of action, lots of arguing. But let's just make this like our chilled-out Caribbean podcast, you know? Let's kick back, crack a few brewskis, or in my case, a Coca-Cola, and just ease into it. So I guess, Adam, you want to ease into this with a song? What do you think?
Yeah, we can jump right in. With the song, let me reach into the. Do you want to go first? Do you want me to grab one?
Or? How about you go first, Adam? I think you can handle this. I think we're chilled out today. We're taking it easy. Anything goes, you know.
We're cool. All right. We're just gonna, you know, you our listeners really shouldn't expect too much here. So if you want to go listen to like a good podcast about interesting things.
This is a good podcast. You know why? Because we're showing the listeners a different side of ourselves. Like usually, like when it's me and Chris Moran always banging heads, arguing about Morrissey, you know, or if it's me and Armando, we're usually banging heads about skinheads. You and me, I think we've got a good chemistry too. I think you and I kind of take a more intellectual approach, although I'm kind of the lesser intellectual approach of us too. But today, and so the podcast listeners, they expect a certain level of debate from us, a certain, I guess, texture of concepts, and that will savor ideas. But today, we're just chilling out. So the Punk News listeners are seeing us in our natural habitat. We're not glued down by any need to, I guess, any need to impress anybody. We're just chilling out, baby, letting it all
hang
out.
We're not posing anymore.
That's right. As of this podcast, we are not posers. We're not posing anymore.
Oh, all right. So anyways, here's a song. This is a band that contacted me a little while ago. They're a band called Wasted Potential. They're from London, Ontario. London, Ontario, for those of you that don't know, is definitely not London, England in terms of its punk rock heritage, but it has some really cool stuff that's come out of there. You want to go back to the 77 era of things. That was where the Demics, or if you want to pronounce it, the Demics, but I don't know how you pronounce it, that, which is one of the great early Ontario or Canadian punk bands in general, was from there. You can grab their whole discography online on the London Music Archive, which is like a website full of free music that is awesome. But anyways, though, so this is not the Demics, although I think I played them on the very first podcast that we did. Someone will have to find that out. Anyways, London is also home to Single Mothers, which a lot of people really like right now. This band is called Wasted Potential. Wasted Potential actually recorded this music at the same place where Single Mothers recorded their latest EP, I believe. Yeah, and this was I think this was recorded at 331 Arts at the Sugar Shack in London, Ontario. I might be totally botching up the names of these places, but anyways, so they're a cool little up and coming punk band. They call themselves and I was actually super amused by this from the logo on their Bandcamp page, Gluten-Free Crust Punk. And there is a nice inverted pentagram pizza as their logo, which again is cool. So anyways, this song it's a new one. I don't think they've released it yet, or anyone in the wider world has heard it yet. It is from their Soho Sessions, and this one is called Pabst Smear. So there you go. Here it is. Wasted Potential. We'll be right back.
And actually, before we even get started on the Punk News Podcast, I got to talk about one thing, and that's jazz. See, I'm out in California for work, and I'm driving my boss's car, one of his cars, and the CD player doesn't work. And so, and I got to say, like, modern radio is terrible. Adam, have you, like, listened to just, like, regular modern AM, FM radio lately?
No, I've become, like, a really stereotypical, like, NPR listener, which makes me sound totally boring, is probably really obvious, but yeah, I know.
I usually bump the CDs, but I do like radio programs that educate you or let you know about new music you haven't heard of. So my boss's CD player in his car isn't working, so I've been listening to the radio, and I gotta say, like, modern rock radio, it's not even like rock radio, it's like pop crossover. It's like they're playing like that Daft Punk song, which I can't stand, which they play every 5 seconds, and this band called Imagine Dragons, like the wimpiest, and like the Lumineers, the wimpiest, most boringest stuff you ever heard. So I'm like, you know what, screw this, I'm going to listen to the jazz station, because I don't really listen to jazz, but they're like just like jazz maniacs, so I'm like, there's got to be something to jazz, so let me see if I can learn what's so great about jazz. And I've been listening to, Adam, do you like jazz?
You know what, I think I went through the same phase as you, where like we have like Jazz 99.1 up here, which is like the big jazz station out of Toronto, and it is on the... I was going to say speed dial, but that's not what they're called. It's on the presets in my car is one of the things that I may listen to. It doesn't really get on that much because I'm usually, you know, listening to something else, but it is there. You know what I realized is that I really like jazz when it's live, and you know, I can totally get down with like being in a, you know, in a bar and there's a band playing. And
do you wear a turtleneck?
I don't wear a turtleneck, but man, there was this place where I went to university that was like it was an awesome pizza place, and they had live jazz all the time. And you'd go and get your, you know, super expensive ritzy pizza and watch, you know, jazz bands, and it was cool. So yeah, I'm cool with jazz. You know, I'm like any good Canadian. I like my Oscar Peterson. So you know.
Well, I've been trying, and I mean, it's all right. I'm just not getting it, though. It all kind of has like the same tempo and the same groove. The bass always seems to go a dum 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 dum, and I'm just getting like, why don't some of these guys do something wild? And then like all the saxophonists try to play like John Coltrane, and all the trumpeters try to play like Miles Davis. But it could be that I'm just getting like a limited selection of jazz. But I gotta say, I have not been wowed by jazz, so I'm gonna say to the Punk News listeners, if you know of good jazz, let me know about this good jazz, because I can sort of get it, but it all just kind of seems like the same thing to me. I do like Herbie Hancock's Headhunters album that I got for a dollar at Streetlight Records, but I don't think that's jazz. I think it's like jazz rock crossover. So anyways, I hope somebody can explain jazz to me. Speaking of new concepts,
I was going to say, where is this going?
I've just been thinking about jazz a lot this week because I'm trying to be cool. And like, yeah, man, I listen to jazz. And you know, like people like that listen to jazz and you're like, I don't really get jazz. They like turn their nose up at you. They're like, oh, you don't like jazz. But a lot of people love jazz. There must be something I'm missing. But all I hear is just kind of like the same bass line and some dude with a saxophone like going up and down and slurring and doing scale. So I don't know, man. But here's where I'm going with this is Large and Grace just released a new single online, digital for free. As the Punk News listeners surely know, Against Me has got a fairly delayed album coming out. I think the album is going to be called True Trans Rebel. Is that the name of the album? No, Transgender Dysphoria Blues. That's the album.
True Trans Rebel is the it's probably one of the singles on there, but is that the name of the EP?
That's the name. Well, Large and Grace just released a solo digital EP. You can get a physical copy on the tour, but it's Against Me is releasing this album later this year. Large and Grace is going on a short tour playing the album in its entirety or something close to that. And so she just released a two song, I would call it a single, not an EP, called True Trans Rebel just True Trans for free. And you can download it right now, but it's only for limited time, apparently. Adam, what'd you think of this jam?
Are we talking about jazz stuff? no, you know what? I was thinking a lot while I was listening to this about you, John.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because you have expressed before on this very show that you are not a fan of the punk frontman acoustic side project thing, right? And now I don't think Laura's doing that here, of course, because she, you know, when Against Me was just starting, she was releasing, you know, all sorts of, you know, acoustic raw stuff as Against Me, when it was just, you know, her and someone, you know, if I remember the lore correctly, you know, like someone playing a suitcase or something as drums, right? So it is I think more in character with kind of Against Me's history to have the kind of quiet acoustic version of their stuff be one of the avenues with which you get to engage with that band. So I'm willing to give them a little bit more of a pass, I think, than you will. But I'm just speculating what you're going to think here. You know, these songs are cool. I'm okay with them. I would much prefer to hear them, you know, as rock songs with some energy behind them. I'd probably much prefer to hear them live because, of course, you know, given Laura's story in the last little while, there's a lot of you know, there's a lot of personal life and emotion that goes into this stuff, and you got to figure that's probably going to come over live a little bit better than on record. So, you know, there's definitely be, you know, I definitely enjoying it, but I want to hear these things ramped up. I want to hear these things a little bit more energy.
I actually didn't hate it. I thought it was actually pretty good. I would say 7 out of 10, maybe. Hopefully somebody's going to review it. I think maybe somebody is. But if you don't see a review, Punk News listeners, you should submit your own review at the Punk News website. But I listened to this song, and one thing about Laura Jane Grace is that she really does know how to write a song from its fundamental components, and that a lot of people write a song and the song doesn't really progress through the song, but Laura Jane Grace really knows how to do dynamics in a song where it starts out at one place and finishes at another. And I think that she's really good at that, and she sounds really good here too.
Well, I mean, I guess the closest thing we have to compare it to, or I guess the most recent output from them to compare it to, would have been that 7-inch that they put out not too long ago.
Russian Spies?
Yeah, the Russian Spies and Occult Enemies was the other side of it. Who put that out? Did Sabbath put it out?
No. I think the Against Me record label put it out.
The Against Me record label. We're just going to call it the Against Me record label. The Against Me record label put it out. And what I really liked about those two songs, I mean, aside from the fact that they were very just kind of like straightforward, fun, upbeat punk songs, was that, you know, they're a band that really knows how to write like a nicely constructed pop song. Where, you know, they're not trying to blow you away by coming up with like funky or weird structures or anything like that. They're not doing anything that, you know, they're not going to impress your jazz buddies with, you know, with the time signatures or anything in these songs, let me tell you. But, you know, as if you are a student of the or a proponent of, you know, the simple is better school of, you know, rock songwriting. Those two songs I really like because they really fit into that for me. And these ones, you know, even though, you know, they're acoustic, I think they're very much along those lines. And I think if you want to put it into the kind of wider context of where is Against Me going as a band and as songwriters, especially now that they're back on, you know, a platform where they're not on a major anymore, so they really have the artistic freedom to do whatever they want, you may end up hearing a more poppy and accessible Against Me than you have before. And that's interesting to me.
I'm hoping for a more extreme Against Me. I'm hoping for an Against Me that ranges across multiple genres. Like at one point, maybe they are crust punk. At another point, maybe they're more like pop punk. With this song specifically, I felt as though maybe it was a little too on the nose. I know that this is a concept album and it's really too early to call it, but the refrain is, "Does God bless your trans heart?" Which I thought was a little too obvious. I feel that like maybe a song could have been written that more depthfully addresses that exact concept or topic. I don't know, though. We'll have to listen to the whole album. I would say that maybe this is a little bit too direct, although I do like direct albums, but I wonder if just like the expression could be a little bit more agile, if you will. But we'll see. We'll see.
I think the one interesting thing about that comment is that I would agree with you, and I was thinking that. But then you know, if you're thinking about the subject matter here, for you know a large swath of you know probably the listening audience, but definitely people that are not, you know, in the punk scene and are going to be confronted with like the gender issues that this is that Laura's been bringing up. Maybe simple is better in that case, because this stuff to us, we're just like, okay, sure, that's kind of obvious when you sing about it like that. But to a lot of people, that's probably pretty controversial still.
Could be. So I'm going to say I'm cautiously optimistic for this album. What do you think?
I am cautiously optimistic about this album, bordering on excited.
I'm going to bring up a related issue, and I don't want to get crucified by the listeners. But and this is me asking a question. This is not me making an argument. I'm asking a question. I noticed that in the Wikipedia for Laura Jane Grace, they went back and removed almost all references to Tom Gabel and removed them as Laura Jane Grace. So they say, like, when Laura Jane Grace was 6, he went to this elementary school or something like that. But I think from a biographical standpoint, that's incorrect. I think what biographies usually do is they refer to the person as they present themselves at that point in time. For example, in Muhammad Ali biographies, they refer to him as Cassius Clay until he becomes Muhammad Ali. Similarly, in every Haile Selassie biography I've read, which is 3, they always call him Tafari Moninika until he becomes Emperor of Ethiopia. Then they call him Haile Selassie. So, and the point of that is because if you're reading it from strictly a, I guess, observant standpoint, it wouldn't make sense. Like, they might, like, they would say, like, you know, Cassius Clay, they wouldn't say Muhammad Ali was born to a strictly Protestant family. That doesn't make sense. Why would a Protestant family name their kid Cassius Clay? Only later, when he becomes a Muslim, does he become Cassius Clay. So I'm not sure that it's correct to refer to Laura Jane Grace as Laura Jane Grace before she presents herself as Laura Jane Grace. Do you know the answer to that? Because I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, there's two, you know, probably competing concerns here. The one is, the and you know and we all struggled with this when the announcement was made, is, you know, what is the appropriate, you know, way to go about, you know, naming conventions and things like that when you're dealing with something like this. I think the other thing is a little bit more of an academic question about, like, you know, what's proper from a, you know, or at least what's not, maybe not proper, but what's tradition from a literary perspective. And I don't know, because I'm thinking about it and I'm like, you know, I've got like a bunch of Joe Strummer books on my shelf here, and I'm looking at them and I'm like, do any of them go through and, you know, refer to the guy as John Miller up until he decides that he's going to be Joe Strummer? Like, I don't know. But if that's just, you know, but again, that's not exactly, you know, equating two things here. That's
right.
It's even an imperfect comparison to you know, to do the Cassius Clay to Laura Jane Grace kind of thing, because, you know, one's a religious conversion, you know, what one is that, you know, she, you know, came out as trans. So, you know, at what point did she consider herself Laura Jane is what you start to ask. And right? I don't know. There's probably no clean answer to this one, John.
Yeah. As with so many of life's questions, So because there's no clean answer, we're going to move on to one more sort of a bummer of a topic, and then we're going to lighten up for the rest of the podcast. I guess it's my fault for putting two – well, actually, I would say the Laura Jane Grace one isn't a bummer topic at all. That's actually a affirmative, life-reassuring topic, but this one's kind of a bummer. We just recently had an interview with Joey Cape about his band The Scorpios, which used to include
Tony Sly.
Tony Sly. That just passed away. And so the interview was done by Jen Hanley. I think it was a really good interview. It got pretty in-depth and really asked Joey, rather. I think this is like the first real interview that gets in-depth asking Joey about how he felt about Tony Sly's death and stuff. And it seems that he's still kind of emotional about it. Well, I mean, it definitely seems like he's still emotional about it. So, I don't really have a comment to make that, oh, he's doing this right or wrong. I just think it's a pretty good article. And brings forth a lot of things that I didn't know, particularly about how they dealt with his passing. And also, I found this the most interesting, is Joey Cape says it is difficult to have, like, Tony Sly's death put right before his eyes every single day with this Scorpios band tour.
It's a really good interview. And I'm not just saying that because we published it, because, you know, when we absolutely have, you know, things that go up that are, you know, some is more informative and some is more in depth. So, you know, I'm not going to say everything that we post is necessarily, you know, brilliant or earth shattering, but, you know, kudos go to Jen here, because this is a really nice interview. And the people seem to like it. So. Hello?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought we had like a weird baby monitor cutout. Again,
it's because it's such a heavy topic.
This is a really good interview. If you are of that era where, you know, that era of fat wreck bands, you know, was important to you. So you were of the Lagwagon, No Use for a Name, you know, of that, like, what was it, like mid to late 90s?
Yeah,
ilk. This is a good one to read. So I don't know. I don't really have a lot to say about it because it's, you know, it sort of speaks for itself. But guys should seek it out.
Yeah, good on Jenny. Did a real good, like, see, I actually, Jen was quite a deft interviewer here, and then he got the subject to open up without the subject feeling like he was violated. So he did a good job. So if anybody's interested in doing interviews, I would say use that as a pretty good example. And a big ups to Tony Sly, I mean, not Tony, Joey Cape, for being so willing to talk about the thing. So, yeah, it's a good article. Moving on to, I guess, more whimsical news or more exciting news is Tim Tinebaum, who everyone knows Tim Armstrong, has been releasing a song a day. Most of them are covers. Some of them are originals. He just released an original with Jesse Michaels, who, as everybody knows, Tim Armstrong and Jesse Michaels were in Operation Ivy together. This is the first collaboration they've done since Operation Ivy broke up. The track is called Living in a Dangerous Land. They're backed by the Bavona brothers. I think they're brothers. There's three of them. And what do you think of the track, Adam?
I'm iffy on a lot of the I'm iffy on basically anything that the Rancid people have done since the 2000 record, which I liked a lot. Everything after that's been all over the place, and I really have a hard time trying to click into what their intent is with their, I guess what their intent's not the right word. Objective. If there's any sort of artistic, if there's any kind of like artistic direction at all to Rancid, or if they just do things and just see what sticks. And I've always sort of considered the Tim Tinebaum stuff to be in that same, you know, in that same vein of just kind of like, you know, we're just going to throw everything at the wall here and see what happens. But yeah, this I like. This is a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun for nostalgic reasons. You know, I think that, you know, Tim's, you know, admittingly weird vocal stylings, which have only seemed to have gotten, you know, more Muppet-ish with age, you know, they definitely, to me, work better when he's either screaming and going fast or he's, you know, playing, you know, a goofy ska song. And this is on the goofy ska song end of things. So that, you know, that's one of the better, I guess, uses for Tim Armstrong than not. And it's great to hear him with Jesse Michaels. Now, that said, I think this, you know, it's absolutely eclipsed by everything that Jesse has done in the last little while. I mean, if you are trying to decide if you want to listen to the Tim Time Bomb thing and how it's going to stack up against, you know, Classics of Love or Kamen Rider or anything like that, that Classics of Love Kamen Rider stuff is all much better. But, you know, it's cool to hear them together. It's definitely cool if you were an old Op Ivy fan to hear them together. But, you know, it's a curio. I'm going to give it that.
Yeah, on Facebook, Jesse Michaels was answering somebody's question. Basically, what he said is he's not going to reunite Operation Ivy, which I think is a good idea because both Tim Armstrong and Jesse Michaels are so far apart from each other just in their headspace and their creative endeavors. I think an Operation Ivy reunion would just be not good. Further, he also said that he actually might do more collaborations, though, with Tim Armstrong in this vein. I think that's cool. I'd prefer more Classics of Love tracks because Classics of Love is so great. But honestly, and I have no inside information at all, but because we haven't heard anything from Classics of Love in like a year and a half, I think it's over. I think Classics of Love is kind of falling apart.
Well, it's...
See, he's down in L.A. right now going to school. But, I mean, we haven't heard anything about Classics of Love at all. And I'm kind of bummed out. But, I mean, that's what the evidence suggests, if you ask me.
No, I mean, that may be. I'm pretty convinced that Jesse's going to keep making music. And he's out of the, you know, he's out of that long doldrum of doing nothing. So, and I don't mean that he's done nothing, but, you know, not, you know, releasing material. So, even if Classics of Love in the form that we saw them doesn't stick around, you know, I'm pretty confident that he's.
But it was so good, Adam. It was.
It was good. I know, but what am I going to do? You got to deal with what happens here. So, but I'm absolutely thrilled that he is not going to reunite Operation Ivy. I think that would be a stupid decision for them to make. If any band would just. I don't know, make me really bummed out that they would come back together. I think it would be Operation Ivy only because, you know, those guys were kids when they had that band. It just doesn't, you know, it's such a beloved thing and it was so good at the time and it holds up so well, I think, that it just leave it alone. Like they've all had huge, I mean, maybe not Jesse in terms of volume or anything, but like they've all had lives and careers, and for them to go back and just to, you know, go play the same songs to, you know, a room full of, you know, nostalgic 90s ska geeks, I don't know, just leave it alone.
What if Tim Time Bomb, side question, is Tim Armstrong now Tim Time Bomb?
You know what? From a cataloging things perspective, which I think every music nerd has in their head at some point, like you want to sort things and you want things to be sorted properly and by the, you know, the right naming convention. In the same way that it would drive me crazy if all of a sudden a band that like had a "the" in front of their name took away the midstream or something like that. It drives me nuts for some reason. I don't know why he can't just be who he is or have a name for this project. And maybe, I don't know, maybe Tim Time Bomb is the name for this project, but like, you know what? I don't know. I don't know if people are similarly like weirdly OCD about band names and sorting and stuff like that. But like, I don't know. There's a part of my brain that like, I'm looking at I'm looking at like Neil Young and then I'm looking at Neil Young and Crazy Horse. And I'm like, how the fuck do I sort these things?
Oh, it's all Neil Young.
No, but so it's not, right? That's the thing. It's one of those. So I guess he's Tim Time Bomb now, but again, that also falls into my, I have no idea what the decision-making process is in the Rancid camp these days. So, you know, he might end up as Tim Armstrong in the next set. Who knows?
What if Tim Time Bomb and Jesse Michaels and the Bavona brothers did a short tour of them doing half new songs, half Operation Ivy songs? Would you go see that?
Yeah, I see. You know what? I would be okay with them playing Operation Ivy songs as some sort of other thing. I would not be okay with them touring as Operation Ivy. I know that's a really fine, goofy line, but that's my line. In the same way that I am far, you know, I'm completely okay with Flag existing, but I think it's kind of lame that there's a band right now touring as Black Flag.
Yeah, what I would say is I love it when bands do like their entire catalog or their entire history. Like if you go see Jello, he does Dead Kennedys, he does Jello in the Guantanamo School of Medicine, but he also sometimes does Jelvins and sometimes he does Lard. And I love it because it makes a concert that much more exciting. A, because you get more interesting songs, and but also because you're never sure what they're going to play. Like if you go see Halford of Judas Priest, I love Halford solo shows because he does Halford, he does Fight, and he does Judas Priest. So those are my favorite kind of concerts. I gotta say, we've already talked about this in the podcast, but Greg Ginn's Black Flag doesn't bother me in the least. But I would say is I think that Tim Armstrong and Jesse Michaels reuniting Operation Ivy would be, I mean, I wouldn't say they shouldn't do it, but I would say it's not as effective or doesn't say the same thing as Black Flag or Flag, because they're both entirely different people and they haven't really continued the path that they were on in Operation Ivy. They've both gone very separate ways. So to see them doing Operation Ivy would just be depressing, I guess. And I can't exactly tell you why, whereas when I see Keith Morris do Flag songs, I think it's the greatest thing ever. But I think it's because Keith Morris is still essentially the same person he was in 1978, where Tim Armstrong is a wildly different person than he was in 1989, and Jesse Michaels is a wildly different person than he was in 1989. Plus, I think the Operation Ivy songs are a little bit more youth-oriented, where Black Flag is a little bit more timeless.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of it has to do with, I think, not polluting a legacy that has a, I'm mixing metaphors here, but that had, that you know, that was done, that had a cap on it. Like the story of that band was complete front to back. You could write the book, you know, you don't have to edit the Wikipedia page anymore. It's done. It's in history. To drag that back up, I think that's one of the things that gets under my skin. And that's why there's certain bands that when they reunite, it is more bothersome than not. So you look at, say, like Buzzcocks when they got back together and released, in my mind, two really good albums in the, I guess, mid-2000s. They, you know, Buzzcocks had everything that they released when, you know, back in, you know, late 77 or, you know, 77, 78, 79, the stuff that ended up on singles going steady. Then they had a bunch of records of sort of decreasing quality that went from there into the early 80s. And then by the time they stopped doing what they were doing, they were definitely not at their prime. So the story of, say, Buzzcocks was, you know, great stuff was happening, and then so by the time they come back and do something again that's cool, you know, hey, the legacy wasn't in a great place at that point, so hey, great, it worked out. By the same stroke, you look at, say, Sex Pistols. Now, I'm admittingly someone that, you know, had a lot of fun at Sex Pistols reunion shows, but regardless, that was a band where, regardless of what anyone thinks of them, they probably should not have reunited in the way that they did, only because when they were the Sex Pistols, they were 20. They were like 19, 20, 21 years old. So to and it was done. So to come back and to all of a sudden like reopen the book on that, it was not a book that needed to be reopened. So I think like that's where, you know, that's where the difference is for me, is that like you look at someone like Operation Ivy, like Sex Pistols, and the story was done. There was a start, there was an end. They went on and did other things. There's lots of great sequels to that story, but the story was done. And then you look at someone like Buzzcocks, sure, they can get back together. You look at something like Black Flag, where, you know what, they had a career. People didn't really like the stuff at the end of the career. They had a whole bunch of different singers. There were lots of versions of the bands, and there's been all sorts of reunion shit since between now and then. I guess that's more okay that Black Flag is doing that stuff. You know, it's the same thing with, you know, Minor Threat. You would not want Minor Threat to get together and start playing shows.
Yeah, you would definitely. Yeah, but see, to me, that's because that's so youth. Like, the idea is they're young guys, you know, whereas I don't know if Black Flag had that conceit, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it. Is that, you know, the people may still be around, but, you know, there was a time and place to when those records came out, and you can't recapture that.
How about Save Ferris? If Save Ferris reunited, would you guys see Save Ferris?
I think the rest of Save Ferris needs to. Are we making references to a story we didn't even talk about on the show?
Oh yeah, I thought we'd all be hip to it. We talked about this about three or four weeks ago on the Punk News podcast. The singer from Save Ferris, I think her name is Monique Powell, but maybe I'm wrong. Is she scheduled a show as Save Ferris, but none of the Save Ferris guys were in it except for her, so they threatened to sue her.
Which is just the greatest tragedy of the. The modern age,
especially because the name is like, how much is Save Ferris really worth? Like 20 grand, 10 grand, you know?
$45 and a pizza. You want to play a song?
Yeah. Let's play a song. Let's see. I've got a fierce jam from. Oh, check this out. Is as the Punk News listeners know, I'm a big fan of Gnarboots. One of the guys in Gnarboots is a guy called Barboso. He's also in a band called Shinobu, which a lot of the Punk News listeners like. He's also a rapper called Barboso. He put out a mixtape last year, and it had him and Jesse Michaels rapping on it, which was pretty great. I think we actually played that track. Well, he's got a brand new album out called Grown Ass Man, and we're going to play a track from that. It's Barboso and Jeff Rosenstock, and Jeff Rosenstock from Bomb the Music Industry, and together they rap, and the track is called, I love the name of this track, Sartorial Panache.
I'm the boss, like a delusional Bowser. In your living room, dropping my trousers. I'm living large like big, call me Tom Hanks. Dancing like a dweeb, rap game, Carlton Banks. I got the dumbest style that you've ever seen. Yeti on my t-shirt, ketchup on my jeans. When it comes to envy, y'all is green. Cause Barboso is a fashion nightmare's wet dream. I mean, like one time I was scamming on this honey at the snack bar. But it was a trap, so where was Admiral Akbar? She pulled out a knife and said nobody has to get hurt. Just hand over your wallet and your Garfield sweatshirt. People jealous cause I got the tidy whiteys. And girls in granny panties, all the Heathers and the Heidis want a piece of my calzones. And I ain't talking food, homie, unless you mean my edible chonies. I got sartorial panache, or maybe I'm just colorblind. I got sartorial panache. I got sartorial panache, or maybe I'm just colorblind. I got sartorial panache.
Hey yo, Barboso, we have four bars here for no reason. Like bump, 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 bump. I see you rolling up in your whack shit. Jealous of my hoodie cause you know that shit is classic. I have the same damn look since high school. You're busy catching up while my shit is looking tight. Full extra large Pennywise shirt and some corduroy. Nick snap back, back, back. Full of sex toys. Holes in my jeans cause I got it and my dick out. Unstoppable with me and Barboso are hanging out. And Barboso and I, whatever. I keep my shit dumb while you kicking it with grammar. We keep the shit fun and we bringing it so positive that when we in the checkout line, they just give us shit. Free pizza on the East Coast. Free burritos with our China on the West Coast. Free cold beer from the store and free space case. Getting high as fuck, rapping holes in your face.
I got sartorial panache, or maybe I'm just colorblind. I got sartorial panache. I got sartorial panache, or maybe I'm just colorblind. I got sartorial panache.
Forgot to mention, lots of stains on my shirt, eating noodles earlier today. Whatever.
And we are back on the Punk News Podcast. I hope you enjoyed Jeff Rosenstock and Barboso wrapping it up, wrapping it down. You can check that track out at barboso.bandcamp.com. So anyways, to keep this podcast rolling right along, basically what happens is, and you can't really hate too much on this, Dropkick Murphys, their campaign raised $300,000 for victims and relief of the Boston bombing, which you can be a pretty jaded dude, but not really a whole lot of bad thing to say about that, except for good for Dropkick Murphys for using their fame to help people out, right? I mean, that's how I see it.
Yeah, you know what? I can't cast any shade in the Dropkick Murphys for this. I like what the Murphys have been doing with themselves. They've always been kind of their own thing. I don't think they've really cared too much about what the, you know, the punk establishment thinks about what they do. And, you know, time and time again, they turn around and they use their platform for good. So this is, you know, one more of those.
I think it's a little bit more interesting, and this is not directly a punk rock thing, but it sort of is. People, and Adam, if you don't want to engage in this conversation, you don't have to, but people were pretty rankled, well, not all people, some people were pretty rankled by Rolling Stone magazine putting the Boston Bombers picture as their front page. Some people said that they were glamorizing him and stuff, while other people said that they were basically showing that not all terrorists, I guess, are the stereotypical terrorists. I actually was not offended by that cover at all because I think it does show, like, when somebody does something terrible, you really should examine that person from all possible angles so you can understand why they would do something like that so you can prevent it in the future. By putting him on the cover, I don't think that's offensive. I think that's confronting us with someone who would do something so horrible and it gives us a chance to try to understand why he would do that. I don't know if you've got an opinion on that or not, Adam.
I don't necessarily know about the moral argument or the ethical argument for what Rolling Stone did. I think from a any news is good news perspective, it was a brilliant move on their part. I haven't heard, you know, Rolling Stone discussed in as many places as I had in the past day ever. And I can't think of the last time, even when Rolling Stone did, you know, major, you know, they've always done some pretty hard hitting journalism about things. There was, and I cannot put my finger on what the exact story was, but you know, they exposed a few scandals in the past decade that were
a lot of banking scandals.
Things related to America they had exposed. But anyways, they've done a lot of that, and that's got them in the news, of course, but you know, not to the degree of this. So you got to think that, like, you know, from that perspective, from getting people to all of a sudden stand up and go, "Hey, shit, Rolling Stone is a thing," and not only is Rolling Stone a thing, but they're pissing me off. I mean, that's just, you know, hats off to them from a PR perspective, because they can do that, and they can default back and say, "Oh, you know what? Well, we're a rock and roll magazine. We once put Charles Manson on the cover. You know, we're allowed to do things that are controversial, and you know, and we can tweak you and everything like that, because hey, it's rock and roll, so this is what we're going to talk about, so fuck you." So they can do that, right? It's not like, you know, it's not the same thing as, you know, Time magazine making him person of the year or something like that. Like, you know, Rolling Stone has more leeway, I think, to do that. So, you know, the fact that they did is pretty, you know, I think was pretty savvy from making sure that they are in conversation. Now, is getting them into conversation worth necessarily, you know, potentially glamorizing the kid? Is it worth, you know, definitely, you know, causing some hurt feelings amongst people that were, you know, still, you know, very much grappling with the tragedy? I don't know. I'm not going to judge that. You know, it wouldn't be a controversial move if it was, you know, if everyone was going to be happy about it. But
honestly, I think that people – I didn't mean to interrupt you, Adam. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this. I'm just – you know, when it came out at first, I thought, huh, well, that's pretty – you know, that's pretty fucking ballsy for them to do that. But now I'm just looking at the reaction to it and just thinking that you know what? Yeah, sure. There's been lots of, you know, but I don't know the names of the stores in the States that were reacting to this, but you know, saying, "Oh, like Walgreens or something isn't going to carry, you know, this issue on their stands." Whatever they lose in terms of like individual issue sales on this to whatever stores are going to decide to boycott it or anything like that, you know, wow, all of a sudden, you know, Rolling Stone has made themselves super relevant, right? So yeah, I'm just looking at it from that perspective and thinking, like, you know, honestly, someone there is, I don't even know where I'm going with this.
I think the people getting outraged really don't know their history, because no one got mad when Osama bin Laden was put on the cover of Time. No one got mad when Hitler was put on the cover of Time. And the reason they're being put on these covers is because they're not saying these are good people. In fact, they always say they're bad people, but these are important people that are changing our lives. And the Boston Bomber suddenly is changing our lives. He's changing our concept of national security, international security, surveillance, and youth culture, all of that. So I really don't see how this is offensive at all. They're saying, here's a guy that blew up a whole bunch of people. Let's see if we can figure out what made him do that, and maybe we can prevent it in the future. So I really don't see – I think people getting mad – are kind of operating from a gut reaction, aren't really thinking what is the purpose. And really, that's not even what bothers me, Adam. And you might disagree with me with this on, Adam, and I've been pushing this a whole lot. I feel that more and more expression is being encroached upon, and that I feel more and more we're exhibiting a sort of non-governmental self-censorship. And so people are like, "You shouldn't talk about that and put him on the picture." Yes, you should talk about that and put him up there, because it's an important thing that needs to be addressed. Ignoring it or pushing it to the back pages or not putting him on the cover says it's not okay to talk about that kind of thing, or even address a concept in that way. concepts and ideas and words cannot hurt people. I don't know why people think they can. And I feel that more and more we're giving credence to the idea that words can hurt somebody, that ideas can hurt someone when really they can't. And anyway, that's just one of my classic John Gentile rant. And I just get a little nervous when people say you shouldn't use this sort of an image anywhere, because to me that feels like censorship and kind of how the Dark Ages started. I don't know. Anyways, you don't have to respond to that, Adam, if you don't want to.
Oh, I'm going to let you do. I agree with you. I'm going to let you let you have it, though, because you expressed it well.
Well, so speaking of hard-hitting news, LA Weekly just posted the top 20 punk rock albums of all time.
Finally! I was wondering what they were, and then, you know, thank God.
Basically, it included all the classics. I mean, you could argue with the order, but honestly, almost all the classics are here. Bad Brains came in at number 20, Rancid at 19, X at 17, Fugazi at 16, Discharge at 14, Green Day at 13, Misfits at 9, Clash at 8, Iggy and the Stooges at 7, Bad Religion 6, Sex Pistols 5, Minor Threat 4, Dead Kennedys 3, Black Flags, Damage 2, and Ramones is number 1. I gotta say, I mean, like, I don't really know if this is worthwhile at all, but I agree with their selections, more or less, to tell you the truth.
You know, it's a pretty, you know, the obvious things are on there. I'm looking at this, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm supposed to react to something like this. And you always sort of waver between, you know, is this good by whatever qualities we're subjectively going to decide or we're going to try to universally subjectively decide are good, or are these things good because they were influential or they were at the right time in the right place?
Right.
And I guess, and that's where you always kind of go back and forth on these, you know, is Kick Out the Jams on here because it was super influential or because that was really one of the best punk albums of all time? You know, Is Bad Religion on here because we think that Bad Religion should be represented in a list of best punk, or is it because Suffer in particular of all their records was the best one and that should be on here? You know, people are going to argue back and forth. You know, is Nevermind the Bullocks on here because it was a great album or because the Sex Pistols are influential and you have to mention them and that kind of thing? If you ask me, I'm going to say that it's because it's a great album and all you people don't like the Sex Pistols because you think you're not supposed to like the Sex Pistols because it somehow gains you some sort of credibility on the internet, can just fuck off.
Sex Pistols rule! Honestly, if you don't like the Sex Pistols, you're only fooling yourself because, A, the Sex Pistols rock. I mean, regardless of anything else, the music just rocks. But second, any punk band would not exist without the Sex Pistols, either as being influenced or being a reaction to them. Go ahead, Adam.
John, you're my favorite person now. I've been like the sole Sex Pistols defender.
Oh, I'm a Sex Pistols maniac. Sex Pistols do not get nearly enough credit, especially now. I mean, they rock, Adam. They rock so hard.
Yes, thank you. All right, good. All right, you're now. You know what? I'm gonna push poor Chris Moran off my list of favorite punk news people, and you're right up the top. There's Woo! Other things on here, of course, that are good and that are on here. But again, fall into that same sort of question about like which of them should be on here. Like, you know, Fugazi, right? They've had a brilliant career kind of front to back. Is Repeater the one? Is that the thing that we have to talk about as being the highlight of it? I mean, it's hard when you have bands that like that had, you know, a pretty long and fruitful career. That, you know, what do you go on? I mean, you know, even you look at the Clash, like, you know, do you go with the Clash? Do you go with London Calling or something like that?
You gotta go with London Calling.
Right. So, I mean, Husker Du, New Day Rising. I mean, I love that record. Is that the one though? I don't know.
These damaged their first 4 years.
Yeah, I know. And that's, but then, I mean, I was saying earlier about how like the naming of bands becomes, you know, it starts to drive people that try to organize music crazy. But first 4 years, does that even count?
It's not really an album.
Right? It's a collection of stuff. But on the other hand, like if I was to make this list and we decided that things that are albums, you know, that can have compilations of stuff count, well, then I would have like Singles Going Steady from Buzzcocks like up in the top 10, right? But that, you know, again, it was a collection of stuff. So that doesn't count, I guess. I don't know. These are weird.
Henry Rollins also posted his own list, which I found two things surprising, is it's almost all English stuff. And I think that just represents his personal taste, and that he probably found out more about English stuff because he was on the East Coast before he found out about the West Coast. It could also be that he doesn't consider the Stooges punk, and I don't mean that as a diss, but rather, I mean, I don't consider the Stooges punk. I say the Stooges came before punk, you know.
I think he's definitely doing that, right?
I would say the first punk band was either Sex Pistols, New York Dolls, or or Ramones. It's got to be one of those three.
See, I wouldn't include New York Dolls.
I wouldn't either. But I mean, I was listening to New York Dolls. They sound pretty punk, you know.
Well, sort of the Stooges, right? But I would still put the line after the Dolls.
I won't argue that point. I'll concede to that. What's interesting about? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No.
Henry named a couple of a little bit more obscure records that are really good. Lurkers, Alternative TV. The Ruts are, I guess, sort of obscure in America. Really good band. The Damned aren't obscure, but they're phenomenal. Bad stuff. But he didn't name Black Flag. And I wonder if Henry is like being passive aggressive towards. Well, maybe he didn't say the first 4 years was an album. But like, you know, remember a couple of weeks ago, he kind of dissed Keith Morris and Chuck Tukowski.
I don't know. I think that, you know, I could totally see that he's trying to be a little bit of a gentleman here and says, you know what, I'm not going to name the band that I was in because that's a little bit on the nose. Like, I could see him maybe taking it from that perspective. I don't know if he would use this list as his, like, avenue of passive-aggressively dismissing the rest of Black Flag. I don't know. He seems like a pretty direct guy. Like, he wouldn't need to do that.
True. Maybe I'm reading too. I could be reading too much into it.
I mean, I gotta say two of his things on his list are like my all time favorite things in the world, which are, you know, Germ Free Adolescence.
Oh man, that album is great. How about that album?
And Pink Flag by Wire. My God, Pink Flag is such a good record. It's one of those things I didn't come to for the longest time, but it is such a good record. Everyone needs to listen to that if you have not, which you should have. Far earlier in your punk career than I decided to listen to it, but Wire's Pink Flag is so good.
Yeah, Adam, you are absolutely right. But also, Germ Free Adolescence. I think in America, people don't really care about Polystyrene and the X-Ray Specs that much. But they just re-released that album with like basically all the other tracks. There's also another version of the album called Let's Submerge, which has even more than that. I mean, you should just buy it. It's basically the entire X-Ray Specs discography plus some. And on every track is just so good. Not just Oh Bondage Up Yours. Stuff like I'm a Cliche. And the music is just – oh, also the song Germ Free Adolescence. She's so fiery. I got to say, not a whole lot of people could challenge Ari up, but she comes close, I'll tell you.
So is it weird to you that Rollins has Generation X listed?
No, that's not weird at all. If you listen to his radio show, he plays Generation X quite a bit. And remember, when Generation X started, like, they were actually pretty punk. Because remember, Billy Idol was in Chelsea. He roaded for the Sex Pistols. He was at the Solomon Grundy interview. And also, Tony James was in Generation X. And the drummer from Generation X, I forget his name, was briefly in the Clash. I think a lot of pretty punk rock people just feel that Generation X is just a really, really good classic punk band that don't necessarily have the politics of the Sex Pistols, but they do have a fundamental love of music. I think that's what has always shown through in Billy Idol's music, is that he's not punk rock because he, you know, hates something. He's punk rock because he loves the idea of the classic Chuck Berry rock and roll style song.
Okay, all right, I'll give you that. The one thing on here which actually sent me down like an hour long mission, as you do on the internet here, where all of a sudden you find you're wasting a lot of time, was so Rollins lists Alternative TV's The Image Is Cracked. Now, I have, you know, I'm outing myself as someone who sucks here, but I had not heard that band at all, but I had heard of that band at all. But I mean, I heard of them, but I don't think I'd ever actually heard anything by them. But then I was thinking about it and I'm like, I remember reading years ago in Spin, actually, our corporate master's Spin. I remember reading in there in an interview with Joe Strummer back in it was probably one of the later Joe Strummer interviews before he died, where someone asked him what the perfect punk band is, what the ideal punk band is, and I had it in my head did he say, you know, Alternative TV as the band? And I went and I looked it up and I found it. And no, what he said was, as Strummer said, Ramones first, But then he said he was a big fan of Television Personalities, which, which again is a band that I don't think I'd ever actually listened to. So I just like before this podcast went on, was on this like hour long. Okay, what is the difference between alternative TV and Television Personalities, and what should I be listening to from either of them? And that's my mission that I'm on the Punk News Podcast readership. So email us podcast@punknews.org. Of those bands, alternative TV, Television Personalities, what do we need to hear to properly school ourselves on that stuff?
Adam, are you ready to have your mind blown?
Blow my mind.
Remember earlier in the podcast we're saying, well, John doesn't really like the solo acoustic guy punk, which I don't. But last night I saw Black Dahlia of the Dwarves do solo acoustic guy stuff, and it was hilarious and it was great. But check this out, Adam. Before he came out, there was this song called Jerry Ingram Knows. I'm like, this is a really weird and unique song. This song is kind of cool. I looked it up. Guess who recorded that song?
Who recorded that song?
Television Personalities. First time I ever heard that band ever, and it was a pretty cool track. So I got to explore that song too.
There we go. You know, everyone's gonna just you know, be like, oh, listen to Marquee Moon. And does that, fuck you. Because we know the difference between that band and these two bands.
Well, they also might be like, oh, you don't know about Television Personalities? No, I thought you were punk. Honestly, there's so many punk bands, nobody knows them all. You know what I mean? I mean, to any punk news listener out there that says, John, you don't know Television Personalities? I thought you were punk. I say to you, how about the Killjoys, homeboy? Do you know the Killjoys? Because I do. So take that. Take that.
That's your Trump card.
The Killjoys was Kevin Rowland's punk band before he was in Dexy's Midnight Runners, and they're actually a really good band. So they're kind of like the Lurkers, believe it or not, we're drawing this out, but along the lines of Television Personalities and alternative TV, there's also Psychic TV, who I thought was alternative TV, but is not. Psychic TV is Genesis Peorage. Of Throbbing Gristle's side project, and that's a pretty cool band too.
All of these bands, including Tom Verlaine's Television, should tour together.
I would go see that. I would definitely go see that.
I don't know. I don't know where I was going with this. I mean, it's weird with you know, bands that were clearly around before we were born, because at that point, you know. At what point are you doing it right? Are you into your local scene and you know everything that's going on that's actually, you know, young and vibrant and actually happening? Or are you doing the history thing and going back and listening to everything that was young and vibrant and happening 30 years ago? Or are you doing both because you have infinite time to do that kind of shit? I mean, I don't know if we're in an era where we can necessarily judge people based on, like, you know, which band from 1978 they have or haven't heard. But I don't know, maybe that's why lists like this are useful. I mean, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, like, you know what, I don't think I've ever heard, I'm just looking at Rollins' list, I don't think I've ever heard the Lurkers album before. Maybe I should go listen to that. And I will. So there you go.
Yeah, I've never heard The Clash. Are they pretty good?
Yeah, who are they?
So let's wrap this up with two quick articles. Fest. We always got to talk about Fest. Because we're zooming in on the Fest year, and this is the year of, like, what, 7-day Fest or 6-day Fest? But the Fest proper, I guess, is October 31st through November 3. A lot of bands there that just announced a couple of new bands, all with Chad Price. Of course, everyone knows all is basically a Descendants spinoff group, United Nations, Fake Problems, Circle Takes Square, Titus Andronicus, one of Adam's favorite, Sundowner, Titwheel, Bangers, The Tim Version, Joey Briggs, The New Lows, and Football, etc. Adam, I'm probably not going to Fest this year. I'm assuming you're not because you got a baby on your hands. But if you were going, would you check out any of these bands? And yeah.
Yeah, the baby won't Fest. You know what? I'm still a little bit slightly confused and iffy about the whole fact that the Fest is like 25 days long now. But that aside, the more bands that are added to this, the more I wish I was there. When the initial kind of slate of bands were listed to this, I was like, all right, I'll deal. Right. But there's enough stuff now that I really like that is on here that I think would be a really good time. You know, Titus, as you just said, you know, I like Titus, you know, fake problems. I would love to see them in this kind of environment where you know, they're probably the kind of guys that are going to be, you know, at half the shows that these other bands are playing, because they all, you know, they were just touring with the Menzingers and they're on this, right? So there's, you probably have all kinds of like cool, you know, hey, this guy's going to show up on stage and play a few songs with us type shit happening. All is crazy. That's awesome that All is there.
At this point, is All more exciting than the Descendants because the Descendants have been doing gigs lately?
I don't know if All can ever get out from under the Descendants, but I think that they can. You know, if those kids play their cards right, they'll do well. That's what I'm going to go with. Yeah, I mean, the Descendants are always, I think, going to have people's hearts. But I mean, you know, how often do you get to see an All show? But there's so much other stuff that is on this now that you know, I mean, like the Night Marchers are playing this, right? Like you get like some like John Rice stuff going on. That's fucking cool. I'm just going through this giant list.
Ceremony.
Forgive me. This list is gigantic.
Ceremony, kids. If any of you guys out there like punk rock at all, go see Ceremony. Ceremony is fantastic live. Really good live. Also, well, never mind. I'm not going to. Adam, we'll talk off the air.
Okay. Oh, man. But there's a lot of bands.
White Lung's pretty fierce. I've seen that.
White Lung would be amazing. Is Crusades? Crusades is playing this. There's some fucking good Canadian bands on this, because that's what the show is about. Really, is Canada. Yeah, there
FYP,
are.
FYP is pretty cool.
FYP. There's an Anne Beretta reunion at this thing. Oh God, Chris Moran's probably kicking himself if he's not there for that.
Audacity's playing. The kids probably don't know about that band. I just learned about that band not too long ago. They're a pretty cool West Coast garage rock style band, but they're pretty punk rock, like speed wise and intensity wise. So if you want to check out something new, check out Audacity. They're pretty cool.
This is a list of bands that is so big that as I am looking at the list of bands, I am becoming lost. Like it is impossible to read.
Masked Intruder. All the kids are probably excited for that. Mikey Erg. The kids are probably excited for that.
Oh, they should be excited for Mr. Mikey Erg. Oh, man, there's a lot of stuff on this. You should just go to punknews.org and read this big list of bands, because there are quite a few of them on it. I don't know. Is this what the people want? Do they want to listen to us look at this list of bands?
What they want to know, they want to hear us talk about is, speak of Masked Intruder, this new Masked Intruder video called I Don't Want to Be Alone Tonight. It's basically kind of like a SNES or NES video game imagery set to a music video. I think it's pretty cool. I'm not a huge fan of this band. I really don't see the hype beyond the gimmick, but I do like this video a lot. I think this video is very, very clever.
The video is very clever. I'm all over the place on Masked Intruder. I think that they play much better as a punk band than as when they're doing their kind of I don't even know what you would call it. Their
shtick.
They've got this kind of like sappy love song thing. Yeah, shtick, right? And
people like that though. The kids eat that stuff up.
Yeah, but I mean, like, and it's cool, and I get that it's kind of in the whole Ramones core tradition, probably a lot more than a lot of the stuff that we consider Ramones core. You know, you look at like, you know, the Ramones themselves, and they were listening to all this like girls group stuff, and you know, and repurposing a lot of like those sounds. That said, I'm just not into Masked Intruder's sappy love song stuff to the degree that I'm into them when they're just kind of rocking out. But
well, I agree, and here's my take on it is. I feel people, like, when they do these sappy love songs, like, oh, we're like the Ramones. But if you really listen to the Ramones, both in the lyrics and in Joey's delivery, there's usually a certain sadness or a certain anger to the love songs, whereas a lot of these Ramone core love songs are just like, I love you, you're great, I love you, let's kiss, ba-dum-bum, where the Ramones really don't have, like, any songs like that, you know? And I think it's because the Ramones grew up on the Ronettes and Phil Spector stuff, whereas these guys grew up on the Ramones, so I feel there's an extra level that's missing in a lot of this Ramones core stuff. But that being said, you know, bands could do a lot worse than Masked Intruder, that's for sure. I mean, I'd rather listen to Masked Intruder than, well, I'm not naming names. Oh, but before we go out, I gotta mention one thing real quick. Speaking of naming names, I used to be pro Justin Bieber, not that I liked his music, but because, like, let's be real, Adam. If you're 14 and some guy says to you, hey, Adam, what, you're 14, I'll give you millions and millions of dollars, and you can go out with any girl you want if you just sing these stupid songs. What would you say when you're 14?
When I was 14?
Yeah.
So, I'd probably be like a horrible mess of a human being and just, you know, live a reprehensible life.
I'd be like, hell yeah, I'll do it. Millions 14. Of dollars, I mean, chicks, you better, I'll sing whatever you want me to sing. I don't care. I mean, anybody's like that. And so when people were hating on Justin Bieber, I'm like, you know what? If you were in his position, you do exactly what he would do. You sing those crappy songs and get really rich and go out with a lot of good-looking girls. I mean, what guy won it? I mean, for real, don't fool yourself. So I was pro Justin Bieber, and I was always sticking up for people when people were hating on him. However, I don't know if the Pug News listeners know, but like last week, he got caught like pissing in the mop bucket. Do you see this, Adam?
I read about it. Is there footage?
There is. It's like basically Justin Bieber, like his seven friends, like watching Justin Bieber stand around a mop and a bucket, and Justin Bieber pisses into it, and he says like "fuck Bill Clinton" or something, or "I hate Bill Clinton" or something like that. And so I guess I'm no longer a fan of Justin Bieber, and here's why: because if someone said to me, "You want millions of dollars and have any girl you want, just sing these songs," I would say yes. But I still won't be like mean to other people by pissing in that bucket. He, like, some dude that makes like $7 an hour or even less has to like clean that up after him, and you know, for after his 12-hour shift, and then go home and barely be able to pay his bills. Meanwhile, Justin Bieber is just being like this Nero type debauched character. So I gotta say, Justin Bieber, with you pissing in that bucket, you lost me, man. You really did, because before you were just some dude enjoying life, but now you're just some dude that stomps on other people without thinking about their life situation.
Wow, you put a lot of meaning into that.
Bucket. I felt let down by Justin Bieber, because I used to be like, you know, good for him, man. Like he's excelling at something, and it's working out well for him. But with that, it's like he went from being a guy that's, you know, just enjoying the fruits of his life and, you know, a hefty amount of luck. And if luck gets thrown your way, you might as well enjoy him. But he's taking that luck and he's using it to do mean things to people that shouldn't have mean things be done to them, which I cannot abide by. I cannot front that. I got to say, thumbs down, Justin Bieber. But you know who I got to say thumbs up to, Adam?
You have to say thumbs up to.
I can say thumbs up to Mikey Erg, and here's why. Not too long ago, Asian Man Records released a very, very limited comp that you could only get if you like join their subscription club. It's called Asian Man Music for Asian Man People, which references both Fat Music for Fat People and the older comp, Rat Music for Rat People. And on it, Mike Park, the owner of Asian Man Records, had a whole bunch of Asian Man bands cover other Asian Man bands. I think one of the most exciting tracks is Mikey Erg covering The Plus Ones. This is Mikey Erg playing touring in the fall.
As of today, you're far away, but I've got news that's long overdue. Just to tell you that I'm touring in the fall. For now it's June, but pretty soon the band will be back out on review. Cause that's what we do. And every state we play will make you just another show or two away. When we pull into your town, cause I know
wraps up this issue of the Punk News Podcast. Adam, how do you think we did in this slow news week?
I was all right. We didn't. No one got hurt. Well, feelings, got, maybe. But
my feelings about Justin Bieber got hurt because I believed in you, Justin. I believed in you, and you let me down, man. You let me down. But that's all right. Justin, if you want to contact us, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And as always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast do not represent the opinions of Punk News or anyone in particular. They only represent the opinions of the people making them exclusively. Thanks again for listening. I guess we'll see you next week. What do you think, Adam? I'll give this podcast 2 thumbs up. Or as they say, you know, 2 anti-Biebers. What do you think?
You know what? It beats being in jail, I guess.